Good morning. We are back. This is Sharp Elbows with me, Francesca Hong, and the phenomenal Nada El-Makashvi. And our special guest today is Matthew Brongen. So, Matt, before the break, we were talking a little bit about the segregation of Madison, our experiences growing up in this city. I've got a little kiddo now, George, who's five, who will be going to elementary school, Lapham Elementary School, actually, here soon. And you were talking about kind of these islands that have islands of communities of color or people in these communities feeling very much like they are on an island, that there's this disconnect and a segregation. What do you think some of the efforts, you know, in coalition building that's happened, and me being kind of a forever optimist here, I do think that this coalition building is happening. I wouldn't go as far as to say we're building bridges quite yet, but there are connections happening and there is work going on. But what I see there, a lack of work, where the lack of work is amongst kind of, I would say, white community leaders, often needing more direction, instruction, or what I like to call mining information from other community leaders, specifically folks of color. How do we kind of move past that? Is there a way to do it where there is more of a shared labor, or actually is it just all on white folks to do that work?
That's the emancipation question. And I don't want to say $1 million, but that's the big question. Is how to move forward. Ultimately, there is a delicate balance. I think there is a lot of work white folks, or as I like to think, as James Baldwin said, people who like to think they are white, need to do amongst themselves, but at the same time it's still very much collective work, and we're all kind of figuring this out as we go in real ways. Part of this, I think, is historical, as the legacy organizations and people, it's the right civil rights movement and Black Power movement, particularly the Black Power movement, as it evolved beyond the civil rights movement. You know, these folks were assassinated and locked up, and these organizations were broken down and destroyed. So there's very much of a gap of a generation gap of lost knowledge around collective organizing. That was the real danger from the Black Power movement and the, you know, Chicano movement, is that they started organizing across race. Particularly when you look at, you know, these were predominantly lower class folks that were organizing across race. This was the big deal with Fred Hampton in Chicago, and successfully organizing with Puerto Ricans and low income whites that were fighting a lot of times. So again, it's just the $1 million question. I think white Madisonians have a lot of work to do. Particularly, you know, as I think you correctly pointed out, in listening and reaching out and figuring out the right points to do it. Let's say there's an initiative too far, what might happen is they'll come up with the framework or the pilot for an initiative, say like, let's mental health first responders, right? And then go, once they design it, then they'll go to those that are most impacted. After it's designed, instead of incorporating voices within the design phase, or even the pre-design phase. And so then at that point, it's kind of almost too late, yeah, once you start designing something out. So it's figuring out the right process line, as well as the knowledge base, to do these things.
Well, it's very, I think it's also a lot of people, and I think it's really interesting that you said either white people or people who think that they're white, there's a lot of guilt that holds people back from kind of going forward and making these necessary changes in each of our lives, this idea that if we ignore it, it's not our responsibility. And I see this also kind of aversion to changing how language is and how that imposes kind of segregation in Wisconsin. Like, for example, we're 50th, I think, in the nation for education, when it comes to the gap between Black and white kids. And I see so many people saying, oh, it's the education achievement gap, when really it's an opportunity gap, right? Between Black and white kids that keeps them back. And even the simple switch and the simple kind of idea that it's opportunities, it's where someone grows up in Madison, you know, what school they're exposed to, what, you know, bike paths or parks that they're exposed to, what transportation services, those all play into, you know, what segregation, I mean, in education or in employment, in income, that it all plays into it, right? And I think when you say islands, that's immediately where my mind goes.
Yeah, I'd like to, you know, add even a little bit more to that opportunity, resource, and benefit of the doubt gap. Partly like in thinking, you know, these gaps transcend class. Mm-hmm. And I, you know, medical disparities are a great example of this, where we know particularly Black women aren't listened to. You know, we see this in child mortality rates, in what's the you know, when a woman dies giving birth.
Yeah,
right. These rates, you know, these things transcend class. And this is because Black women aren't being listened to about, you know, just their own body and level of pain, regardless, you know, it's regardless of access to insurance or medical care, it's that benefit of the doubt, as well as, again, resources, which, you know, you could say that benefit of the doubt is a resource in a way. And then you look at these communities, again, it's resources. The safest communities don't have more police or more programs, they have more resources. Secure housing, secure food access, you know, green space, in safe green space, safe streets, well-maintained streets, well-connected streets, walkable streets, and access to well-paying jobs. These are a childcare. These are resources we're talking about. And the base access of resources, in my view, is what creates the opportunity gap. When you cut off access to resources, you create and you diminish opportunities.
I'm snapping my fingers. I don't know if y'all can get benefit of the doubt. It's very interesting, as I grew up and like here in Madison, and kind of looking at how Black women and Black birth givers are not believed. I remember going to the doctors and feeling like I had to prove something, right? And I didn't realize, you know, how my skin color played into that. But we will be right back with Matthew Rongan after this quick break. You're listening to Devil Radio 92.7 FM.
Rolling down the trail.